Translation. The characteristics of Krishna are understood to be a storehouse of transcendental love. Although that storehouse of love certainly came with Krishna when he was present, it was sealed. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came with his other associates of the Panchatattva, they broke the seal and plundered the storehouse to taste transcendental love of Krishna. The more they tasted it, the more their thirst for it grew. Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is called Mahavadanyavatara because although he is Sri Krishna himself, he is even more favorably disposed to the poor fallen souls than Lord Sri Krishna. When Lord Sri Krishna himself was personally present, he demanded that everyone surrender unto him and promised that he would then give one all protection. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this earth with his associates, he simply distributed transcendental love of God without discrimination. Sri Rupa Goswami, therefore, could understand that Lord Chaitanya was none other than Sri Krishna himself, for no one but the Supreme Personality of Godhead can distribute confidential love of the Supreme Person. Oma jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurum militam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So they asked me to come and give a Sankirtan class. I said, well, you know, what is that? I've been listening to some of the classes. My wife gave class, very good class. Kishore gave class, very good class. Very good class. Don't shake your head. Wasn't it a good class that Kishore gave? It was wonderful. Give him a round of applause. I watched him because Prabhupada writes the famous letter. What is this thing touching my skin? Didn't he write that to you? Yeah. What is this thing? Because the devotees were going out in the cold and distributing books. And Prabhupada said, I couldn't do that. He said, but you just go out and you think, what is this thing touching my skin? So as much as we were in awe of Srila Prabhupada, I think in some small way he was sort of in awe of what the devotees... How many books? There's this thing that everybody thinks that Prabhupada is Trikalagya, he knew everything, he could see everything, he could understand everything, he's omniscient, he's the super soul because he's the guru. But my personal understanding is that Prabhupada was even surprised at the efforts that the devotees put in to distribute his books. Even Prabhupada was surprised when they first started doing it. After some time, perhaps, you know, the numbers became... you know, sort of an expectation. But it was, I mean, how can you sell a book to a person who doesn't want one? You know? Do you know what a runaway bestseller is? You know, if you get a Jeffrey Archer, you know, runaway bestseller, or you know, some other name. So it's a seller, paperback, international bestseller. 20,000. 20,000. A runaway best, that's a runaway bestseller. If you sell 20,000 copies, you become a highly interesting commodity. You sell more than that, and people in Hollywood start getting your number. And you become, you know, you as an author become very famous. Your agent becomes very famous. He plunders not the storehouse of love of God, but he plunders the bank. I have a devotee friend who is one of our champions of book distribution. He's still distributing books from India, but he plays cricket, and it's a cricket team just for publishers, just for people who publish books and distribute them. And one of the people on the team who I was happy to meet was the man who said yes to J.K. Rowling. The man who said yes to Hogwarts and Harry Potter. He's a very happy man right now. Everybody else said no. He said, all right, we'll give it a try. My 8-year-old daughter liked it. Runaway bestseller many, many times over. As J.K. Rowling went from writing a book in a cafe with no money to, you know, at least 500 million. And let us compare that to Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. How did his books do? Well, if a runaway bestseller is 20,000, there's no BBT book since the 1970s where they've ever printed less than 100,000 in English. And he's looking at me and he's thinking, well, that's not quite true, but am I right? We go for big numbers. How many Vedas did you print? Probably less. Minimum 50,000, okay. And other books. We were the, there was a famous press in, the Kingsport Press in Kentucky, in America. And they were famous for printing the Bible. Yes, Surrey, we print the Bible here in Kentucky. They said, look, this is not exactly the Bible, but it's a Hindu Bible. Can you print it? Depends how many pieces you want to print. We'd give you a good deal. Okay, so it was a new edition, new English edition of the Bhagavad Gita at that time. 1976, it was the what we now call the yellow edition. Here in England, we just had a BBT in England, which was just up the stairs where the Treasury was. And from here, from this building, we printed at least 50,000 of the blue Bhagavad Gita. It's called the blue Bhagavad Gita. Now we went into the yellow Bhagavad Gita. And they printed at the Kingsport Press. They were astonished. They were astonished. They printed 1.5 million of a book that no one wanted to read. They said, you guys must be out of your head. How are you going to get people to read these books? Well, we are going to go get this. Which bookshops have you got lined up? Have you ever heard a devotee say, we're going to a bookshop to put Prabhupada's books in a bookshop? You know, that place where people go to buy books? No, we're out in the street outside the bookshop, and we're inviting people to buy a book that they had no intention of buying that morning when they woke up. Who wakes up in the morning thinking, well, you know what I really want to do today? I want to meet a total stranger on the street and buy a book that I can hardly understand. Because my life is such a mess, and he's coming to me. In fact, I am a conditioned soul. And he's going to look upon me with pity, and I'm going to buy a book from that man. Yeah? Have you ever heard anything so preposterous? Okay. But the devotees, they don't think it's a preposterous idea. And therefore, we print 1.5 million Bhagavad Gitas, and we run out into the street and distribute them. Or go knocking on the doors, door to door. Now Sutapa has a wonderful door-to-door program where people are going knocking on the doors. In the Frankfurt Book Show, the printers, they line up for getting the BBT deal. You can sometimes see 6 or 7, usually men or women with their briefcases, they're from publishers and they want the BBT contract. Because BBT publishes, but it doesn't print. So BBT is always looking for printers. Okay, you see those words behind Prabhupada, the B and the B and the T. Okay, BBT, we're looking for printers who can handle a good quantity. And good, it must be very... So BBT is very much into the quantity and the quality and getting a good deal, good prices. Sometimes the best price will come from Hong Kong. These days, sometimes the Chinese want, you know, business. So you'll see a person from BBT in Northern Europe sitting down with a Chinese businessman to print Prabhupada's books, not in Chinese, but now also in Chinese. So the point here is that any printer wants that business. It's very good business to have. But it's a book that nobody really wants to read because it tells them about something that it's going to change your life. I don't want people telling me how to change my life and do something differently. I just want to be told that I'm leading my life in the proper way and everything's wonderful. And I can be happy just by holding my nose and doing a bit of yoga. You know, I'll read a book like that. But devotees... It's quite a phenomenon. And why is it a phenomenon? The only reason it's a phenomenon is because of the Panchatattva and the Parampara. This verse is all about how they relished love of God themselves. But the very next verse is, Sri Panchatattva themselves danced again and again and thus made it easier to drink nectarian love of Godhead. They danced, cried, laughed, and chanted like madmen. So this is how to do your Krishna consciousness movement. Dancing, chanting like madmen. And in this way, they distributed love of Godhead. Now, people feel this, and they want to be part of it. Either they read, and the heart is like a sitar. A sitar has top strings and then sympathetic strings. So sometimes people, their hearts are moved in a particular way because they see this chanting and dancing and this happiness, and the sympathetic strings in their heart are moved. And sometimes they'll just read one word and they're moved. And why should people be so moved if it wasn't something that touched them at a very deep level? And it's a very amazing thing. So that all of that out the way, I'm here today to give you a class. That was just the warm-up. But today's class is about three dimensions of Sankirtan, and it is embodied by three specific personalities, one of whom we are celebrating his birthday today. And that is Saranga Thakur. Birthday, disappearance day. Which one is it? One of them. We celebrate both of them. So, how many have been to near the home of Saranga Thakur? Yeah? There are nine islands in the Navadweep area. That's why it's called Navadweep. And Mayapur is there in the middle, and one of them is called Modadrumadweep. Modadrumadweep. You have to... It's a little journey to get there. It's sort of an outside island. It's said to represent the principle of devotional, the service mood, the service attitude. But there, in a very small village, just a hamlet, you will find the place of Saranga Thakur. Now, Saranga Thakur's story is very interesting because he wasn't, you could say, an emblem of this madly chanting, dancing, and distributing love of God, although he was a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But you can be a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in two ways. You can be a bhajananandi or a goshtiyanandi. Bhajananandi means one who relishes love of God for himself, and goshtiyanandi means one who takes pleasure in the goshti, in the fellowship with others, or creating an assembly. And so Saranga Thakur had a very peaceful life. And really, you know, that's what spiritual life is all about. It's about being peaceful. We spend an awful lot of time being peaceful. We get up at the peaceful time of day. We establish peace in our minds. We try not to look at our smartphones before we begin our japa. We don't want extraneous noise. We try to separate ourselves from the multitude of noises that come into the modern life. You know, radio, TV, and, you know, everything bleeps these days. Have you noticed? The microwave bleeps. Even the washing machine bleeps. Your phones bleep. Everything bleeps. There's so many bleeps. Bleeps are the single most distracting element of trying to meditate. And that's why you go to some Zen retreats and you're not allowed to use your phone. They lock your phones away. Because you've got to sit and meditate. And if you're meditating, don't take your phone with you. As Prabhupada would say, confirmed. So try not to, you know, you're trying to connect with one thing. Don't try to connect with so many other things at the same time. So this will give you mental stability. Mental instability or madness is trying to do too many things at the same time. You can't do it. Your mind cannot do it. unless when you open up your chest, there's a big, you know, Superman outfit underneath. But that is in the realms of fantasy. So when you try to do too much for too long, it's called stress. It's called stress. It causes stress. And stress held within the body for too long becomes depression. Because your body is telling you, don't get up. Don't get out of bed. Just stay there. I need you to be peaceful today. I need you to be quiet today. So we, you know, so we, modern life breeds stress. And it is no accident, I think, that there is so much depression. So we get to the root cause of this. It's trying to be too strong for too long, trying to bear too much for too long, trying to do too much for too long. And sometimes even with devotees, we find that. We find people who have pitched their level of devotional practice too high for too long, and they come crashing. So really, that's why you need a guru. You need a guru to give you confidential instructions. Okay, now I think you should try this. Now you should try that. It's a series of micro adjustments all in the right direction. That is why sometimes we find people, they become very elevated in Krishna consciousness, apparently, and then they go away to do a few things, apparently. We find this over my 40 years. I've seen many people come and many people go. What we're aiming for in spiritual life is stability, long-term sustainability. So in order to do that, you need peace. You need harmony in your life. Hare Krishna. Thank you for bringing flowers. Krishna will bless you. So here's Saranga Thakur. Saranga Thakur, he's done that. There is nothing more peaceful than sitting in Moda Druma Dweep by the bank of the Ganges, and you get up before the birds. And you're chanting japa for an hour even before the birds get up. And that is wonderful. And even the sun comes to greet you, and you've been chanting for an hour. Wonderful. You should all try it sometime. Find a lonely place in the hills and be peaceful. And chant 64 rounds of japa. Just do it once in your life, and you'll find it really, really works. Why does it work? Because it's supposed to work. That's why it works. But often we do lower number of perfunctory rounds, distracted rounds, and then we put our bead back down thinking, you know, this process of Krishna consciousness doesn't really work, does it? You have to do enough for it to work. So here's Saranga Thakur. And then we have an incident where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's chastising, he's criticizing Devananda Pandit for his offenses to Srivas Pandit. So he's in the town. Sangatan mission has begun. So he meets Saranga Thakur, and he says, you know that peaceful life that you've got all to yourself? He says, I don't want you to do that anymore. And Saranga Thakur says, what? What? He says, but I'm relishing love of God by your grace. I'm relishing love of God. There are tears in my eyes. Well, maybe, I don't know if he said this, but there was tears in his eyes as he was chanting. His heart was palpitating. He was actually experiencing everything that it says in the scriptures. Why was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the person who came to give that very thing that Saranga Thakur was experiencing? Why did he say, I want you to give up your peaceful life now? He told them to accept disciples. He said, I don't want disciples. They're just a disturbance. Now, we've all got it wrong. In the modern Krishna consciousness movement, when a person takes disciples, they think, oh, he's at the top of the tree. He's the big, he's the mahant, he's someone special. No, he's a person who has taken on disturbances, whose japa will never be peaceful ever again, who can never sit in a lonely place ever again, who will never see the sunrise without the phone ringing ever again. You see? Now, Saranga Thakur didn't have a phone. I'm just sort of, you know, explaining the modern scenario. But there is no question of when people are depending on someone else for their spiritual progress, that that person will come with their problems to that person. So the prophet was giving a, he was a, did you give that? Did you say this in the class or did I read this? Anyway, stop me if you've heard this before, but Prabhupada was on a morning walk and different devotees were saying, oh, Prabhupada, I have this problem in my temple. The devotees don't want to do this. And it wasn't you. And then another person says, yeah, I have that problem in my temple. You know, the devotees are like this. And we have another leader just down the road and he behaves this way. And Prabhupada, I don't know what to do. Then another devotee said, you know what? We've got two of them in our temple and they're really, you know, it's just crazy. Trying to practice and preach Krishna consciousness with people like this. Prabhupada just stopped. And you know when Prabhupada stopped and put his cane on the ground and turned around, he said, I came to give you encouragement. I came to give you encouragement. And you have come to give me discouragement. He said, why you are discouraging me when I am encouraging you? That's why are you forcing me to look at your problems? So this is the relationship of guru to disciple. Everybody thinks it's a wonderful thing, but Prabhupada said, just basically, I have this job to do for Krishna. I have to translate these books. I'm already getting up at 1 o'clock in the morning to do this for the good of the world. And for me to sell the books, all right, I've taken some disciples, but please make my life easy. Don't make it so difficult that every time there's disturbances, every time the postman comes, there's going to be someone's run off with this one's wife, or someone is, you know, has renounced his guru, or this one has done this, or this one's done that, or a temple is closed over here, or someone has run off with the cash over there. Please don't get, you know, but you can go through Prabhupada's letters, and you'll find that Prabhupada is encouraging, encouraging, encouraging. And the letters that come in, he said, Prabhupada responds to them and says, I don't know why you're behaving like this. I don't know why you're thinking like this. Why has he done like this? Tell him to put the money back in the account. It's Prabhupada managing other problems that other people have created for him. So why is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying to Saranga Thakura, now I want you to take disciples? Why? Because he needs Saranga Thakura to make disciples to carry on the preaching mission. You can go now and you can meet the disciples of the disciples of the disciples of the disciples of Saranga Thakura. They're still living there, practicing Krishna consciousness, probably quite peacefully. But and he also wanted, and this is occasionally done, that Krishna comes and says, actually, you're doing very well, but now I want you to do something else. And the something else represents an advancement for you. You see? So most people feel that to privately and peacefully practice my spiritual life, this is everything that I ever wanted. This is what it's all about. But here we have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying to Saranga Thakura, I want something more from you now. So Saranga Thakura was living at the most peaceful place. And he was deliberately practicing Krishna consciousness in a place where there was no one else. So where am I going to meet people? In order to make a disciple, you have to meet 1,000 people, one of whom may be remotely interested in Krishna consciousness. He said, where am I going to meet all those people? I don't live in a crowded place. I don't go shopping. I don't go to the bazaar. Where am I going to do? But he said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has told me. And the next morning, when he woke up in the morning, he said, okay, the first person that I meet today, I will initiate them, whoever and whatever they are. Okay? And so he was just taking his bath in the river when a dead body floated downstream and brushed against him. And it was the dead body of a young man. He said, well, Krishna, you've sent this person. Now, sometimes people who come to the Krishna consciousness movement are not much more animated than that. Sometimes I've seen people come to this temple, they're not much more animated than Saranga Thakura's dead body. So the person was given a mantra. He spoke the mantra into the person's ear. Now, I don't recommend this as a strategy, as a preaching strategy. You know, if you have your soul expressions, you know, you've got to make sure that the soul is still in the body before you start preaching to them. Sometimes it may look as if it's not, but I guarantee that most of the people who manage to get here will be still alive. So preaching, just as a hint, begins when the person is still alive, generally speaking. But actually, Prabhupada also did this. He didn't preach to a dead body, but Prabhupada preached to a person who was sleeping off a hangover. He was sleeping off a hangover. And Prabhupada looked, it was early in the morning in Russell Square. Prabhupada was out. You might even have been there, Kishore. But the only reason I know this story is not because I was there on that morning walk, is because we met the person. And this is Prabhupada. We met him in Sheffield. And this was many years later. This was like 20 years later or something like that. We met him on Sankirtan. And you know, sometimes people spin you a yarn. Oh yes, Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada. I met him. You know, I had breakfast with him. Yeah, all right, you know. Even I didn't get to have breakfast with him, you know. And he said, no, he said, I was sleeping off my hangover in Russell Square Park. And somebody woke me up, and I woke up, and I was surrounded by these orange men. And the old man, he said, he took me back to the temple, and I had a shower, and they fed me a really big breakfast. And then I got to meet the old man, and then he spoke to me for about an hour. He said, I didn't say very much, but he was telling me all these things about Krishna. He said, then I went on my way. I've never been back. He'd never come back to the temple. Never been back to the temple. But he said, I remember it well. What a lovely old man he was. So, you know, this is an example of Prabhupada's compassion. Not only his cup was filled with compassion, but it was spilling over to everybody he met. So here's Saranga Murari. And this is the difference, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the active ingredient here is compassion. Compassion. And this is the only change that you need to make in your life, to go from practicing Krishna consciousness as if it was all about you, to practicing Krishna consciousness as if it was all about us. And that's the difference, is the compassion element. And we say in our Krishna consciousness movement that what the world needs is actually more compassion. There are people now writing best-selling books about compassion. But compassion means extending yourself to someone else. The nature of the world is that we are not compassionate. Because when I'm interested only in my own enjoyment, I will be selfish. And when I'm interested only in my own spiritual life and in my own salvation, which most of us are, you know, most of us are, it will all be about us. So we need compassion to take us from one level to another. So Saranga Murari initiated him, and he became known as, Saranga Thakur initiated him, and he became Saranga Murari. His name became Murari, and he became known as Saranga Murari, the disciple of Murari. And he went on to great things. And Saranga Thakur also went on to great things, great preacher. So, but he needed prodding. And he needed prodding by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, but imbued with the mood of Radha. So this is Radha's mood, to reach out to others and unite them with Krishna. Prabhupada had a favorite painting from the early 1900s from Calcutta, which showed Radharani reaching out to another gopi and joining her with Krishna. So this point here is was also emblemized by someone who's... he was also thinking, how can I take disciples? I could never match up to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. You know, who am I? But if you think that taking disciples is about becoming a guru, then you've completely misunderstood. Taking disciples is about becoming a disciple. It's about becoming a better disciple, and that's it. However, other people look at you, that's their prerogative, but it's about taking responsibility as a disciple. And as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, as soon as you think of yourself as a guru, that's it, you've lost the understanding. But the person was saying, how can I... Then he remembered a story, and there was a story. And did Jiva Goswami tell this story? There was a tree, and there's a tree in a forest, and he's surrounded by fruit trees. And this tree was laden with fruit, but no bird would ever come and peck at that fruit. And one sage was discussing with another sage. He said, have you seen this phenomenon that no one is coming to eat at that fruit tree? And he says, yes, because in his last life, that tree was someone who knew something about Krishna, but didn't teach anyone, who never helped anyone else understand about Krishna. So he had to be born as a tree that was heavily laden with fruit, but that no one was interested in. It's an interesting story, isn't it? So whatever we are, we have something. And Kishore and myself and other Prabhupada disciples, my wife there, we were sent out distributing the Srimad Bhagavatam, the perfection of knowledge of Krishna, within the first few days of coming to Krishna consciousness. We knew not what was inside the book, but we had been given a mission to distribute. Now, of course, at a certain point, Prabhupada said, these books are not for distributing. They're for you to read. He tried to balance it the other way. He said, what's the point of distributing a book if you don't know what's inside it? How will you convince a person? Yeah. So just down the road was a person, just down the road from Saranga Thakur was another person whose life we remember, and his name was Vasudev Dutta. And Vasudev Dutta originally came, he had a brother called Mukunda Dutta, and he came from a place near Chittagong, which is now in Bangladesh. And he came from there, and he was in the Dutta family of physicians. But he made his way to Navadvip and took part in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission there. And he was already set to go. You see, sometimes Krishna has to disturb us a little in order to move us forward. And sometimes it's not the way we anticipate. Just like Sudama the Brahmin. Sudama, famous story, he went to see Krishna. He was so poor, but he didn't want to ask Krishna for anything. He knew that Krishna, his old friend, was very rich. You know the story. So his wife said, just go and ask Krishna. Just go and ask Krishna. It's like my grandfather was very, very poor. But he'd been the cook to Winston Churchill. And when Winston Churchill was the prime minister, his wife said to him, just go and see him. He might be able to help you. You're his cook. He'll remember you. And my grandfather said, no, I don't want to go. It's not done. So Sudama said the same thing to his wife. It's not done. No, I don't want to go troubling Krishna. He's my old friend. And eventually she said, look, just take a little bit of dried rice because it's all we have. Just go and see him. So he went to see him. And of course, Krishna receives him as a kshatriya receives a Brahmin. So Krishna sat him on his bed and gave him cushions and washed his feet. And he bid him farewell. He embraced him. They cried together. I remember when we were youngsters, we went to school together. You remember that night that we went into the forest and there was a storm? And he says, yes, Sudama. He says, yes, I remember that. Those were good days, weren't they, Krishna? He says, yeah. So he goes home happy. Krishna gives him nothing. Gives him nothing at all, except when Sudama comes home and he realizes that his home has been transformed into a palace and his wife is beautifully decorated. He has a garden, he has riches, and Krishna has given him everything. Now, if you're a materialistic devotee, we look at that story and we think, this is Krishna. How wonderful Krishna is. Whatever you want, Krishna will supply to you. Yeah? Krishna will supply to you personally, whatever you need. But the Vaishnava Acharyas look at that story and say, actually, Sudama had an attachment, and Krishna broke that attachment in a unique way. And Sudama's attachment was that he thought he was being spiritual by being poor. He thought that if I'm poor, that's more spiritual than being rich, because if I'm rich, I'll forget God. But by me being poor, God will be easier for me to. And Krishna said, no, that's not the idea. I'm not conquered by someone who's poor. I'm not conquered by someone who's rich. Now, when he went to see, you know, there was two. There was King Bahulashva, and then there was Shrutadev. Shrutadev was very poor. Bahulashva was very rich. So Krishna was walking down the road. He got invitations from both of them. Where's he going to go? Is he going to go to... Now, if it was a story from an Abrahamic tradition, we would find Krishna or God saying no to the king and going to the home of the poor, wouldn't we? But no, not Krishna. He goes to both. And he goes to Shrutadev's house, and he sits on a grass mat, and he's honored with a cup of water and some sweet words and a smile, because that's all that Shrutadev has. Krishna is pleased. Then he goes, and he's also going, and he splits himself in two, actually. So simultaneously, he's in the house of the king. And the king, everything is made of gold. The bowl that he's washing his feet in is made of gold, and everything, all the plates are made of gold, and he's serving him wonderfully. And Krishna is pleased. But is he pleased more? No. Is he pleased less? No. Because devotional service cuts through, bhakti cuts through everything. Is Krishna more pleased with the person that sells 1,000 books than with the person who sells one book? No. Krishna is pleased by the efforts that you make. So Sudama Brahmin had an attachment, and Krishna had to break that attachment. He thought, by being poor, I can be more favored by God. So then God said to him, all right, go home, and now you're rich. Now let's see if your relationship with me changes. You see? So Saranga Thakur was thinking, I'm presuming here, that if I'm sitting in meditation, very, very peaceful, my relationship with God is intact. But God himself, in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, came to him and said, uh-uh, don't think that you can just purchase me like that. I've come for a different mission, and you must help me with this mission. And so he did. But Vasudev Datta, on the other hand, he was someone who was overflowing with compassion. And Vasudev Datta, he said to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, can I take on the sins of the whole world, and I'll take them on, if they can go to the highest destination, the highest realm of God, and if I can go to hell, I don't mind. So this was his conviction, that it could be done. That if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted, it could be arranged. So these are the two different... They were living next door to each other. They're living next door to each other. And you can go today and you'll see the remains of Vasudev Datta's house are still there. You'll still see the bricks. Huh? And then you can go to the place where in the Bakula, there's a Bakula tree. And by that Bakula tree, this is Saranga Murari's chanting spot. And the water is still there. You still go to the same place where he initiated this boy, and of course, we found out later that the boy had passed away on his wedding day. Passed away on his wedding day, and because he was still pure, so to speak, they put him on a raft, covered him with a white cloth, and sent him off downstream. This was the tradition. And so, you know, this wonderful story is there to show the differences between... But compassion makes for the difference. Now, what if you're not compassionate? What if you're not compassionate? Well, you act as if you are compassionate, and then compassion will come. It's sort of like Vaidhi and Raghunuga Bhakti. You know, Raghunuga Bhakti can only be there when pure attraction for Krishna has been developed. But Vaidhi Bhakti is there under the guidance of the spiritual master, under the instructions. So when the guru says, please distribute my books. Please be compassionate. Well, I'm not compassionate, Gurudev. Well, you act as my limbs. Act as my hands and legs. You just do it, and everything will come. You see? So this is the point. So this is, we may not feel spontaneously attracted. They came to Prabhupada and they said, Prabhupada, we're going on Sankirtan, we're going on book distribution, but should we not wait until we're pure before we go out for preaching? And Prabhupada just laughed. He said, if you're waiting until the day when you are pure, he said, that day will never come. But we preach under instruction, and under this instruction, then we achieve that. And it's actually a special grace, just like it was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's grace on Saranga Thakur that he be engaged in the preaching mission. Because that preaching, even mouthing the words that you've been given, so we're given everything, actually. We didn't write the books. We didn't do the haircut. You know, nobody would ever dream up a haircut like this, right? Not really. Why would you wear your hair like this if you weren't, you know, told to? Okay? Not that you absolutely have to, you know, the haircut doesn't go with everything, but why would you wear clothing like this during December? It doesn't quite make it, does it? There's a lot of things, but we do it under the guidance of the guru. So trying to sell a book to someone on a high street, a busy high street, when they're Christmas shopping, right? They're Christmas shopping, and they don't actually want, but I went with, three others to a place called Coleraine. And in Coleraine's interesting, because Coleraine is the headquarters of the evangelical movement in, you don't just say Coleraine, you say Coleraine. And they're standing the other side of the road, and we're standing the other side of the road. So this is sort of, it wasn't exactly interfaith dialogue. And this is the place where the Paisley family lives, okay? The Reverend Ian Paisley, Coleraine, his son lives there. And they would come out from the church and they would preach on one side of the road and we would be on the other side distributing books. And they're very thin pavements. So everybody has to, they have to pass by one preaching group or the other. So sometimes people would avoid the Paisley group and come to us and we would be there with the Krishna books. But on this particular occasion in December, in 1975, 1976, something like that, it was a snowstorm and it snowed all day. And there was four of us standing on one pavement. But by the end of the day, in a snowstorm, we had managed to sell one book for every four people in that town. Now, what are the odds that in a snowstorm, you can sell a book to an evangelical Christian community in the north of Ireland, in the middle of the Troubles, right? It's ice cold, with people doing their Christmas shopping. You couldn't make it up. You couldn't make it up. And yet, and not only that, but we'd gone there under great difficulty, not enough sleep, but by the end of the day, I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but by the end of the day, we were giggling. We were giggling. I mean, we were running up to people and just, you know, not hugging them, because you don't do that in the 1970s, okay? Neither do you do it in the north of Ireland. But it was practically like that. We were giggling with the feelings of having distributed all these books about Krishna. And that's on offer for everybody. It's on offer. It's a wonderful thing. It's got less to do with you than with the person that you're doing it for. And when you give yourself in Krishna consciousness to Krishna, to God, then there is a certain part of you that becomes animated, whereby you manage to find the right things to say to the right person. Even if your attempts at being compassionate are, you know, not exactly genuine, you don't actually feel that compassion, but you're going through the motions of being compassionate, there is a divine reciprocation. I'm not saying that it's the exclusive privilege of the Krishna consciousness movement, don't get me wrong. I think anyone of any tradition, if they sincerely call out to God, or they call out, give me service, allow me to serve you, God will reciprocate. Because God really is just, he's just waiting for us to turn ourselves, to turn our face to him, and to receive the blessings that are there for everybody. But it actually takes compassion, or the assumption of the responsibility of being compassionate, to make an effort with regard to other people. You just can't do it. We're so wrapped up in ourselves that we cannot do it without either someone coming along and saying, you know, you really should help other people. Or waking up one morning and thinking, you know what, I really want to help other people. Otherwise it won't come. So either by the blessings of God in one way, or the blessings of God in another, someone comes to you and says, you know what, you should, you know, stop your meditation and contemplation, which is all about you, and you should do things for other people as well as. See, both things must be there. You must be spiritually strong yourself. That's what you do before breakfast. And then after breakfast, you have to become giving to others. Otherwise, there's a very strong chance that the Krishna consciousness movement can again become a sort of selfish Hinduism. It can become very, very, very easily, it can turn in on itself. And once you get that, that's where you get empty buildings. You can have the most wonderful church, but if people become selfish, it becomes empty. Because who wants to join a community of selfish people? See? So it's really compassion that is the transformative element in any community, in any mission, and in the life of the individual. Compassion. All right, so we've talked about Saranga Thakur, and we've talked about Vasudev Dutta, whose compassion was overwhelming. And I just want to say that next door to them was Vrindavan Das Thakur. And the three of them formed a party, you could say. And this is the third element of Sankirtan, that you do it with others. Because when you do something with other people, then it becomes so much more easier. So let us go forward in our own way, in a way that Prabhupada says here. He says, I'll just close with this. Sometimes we, you know, it has become the, you know, the rallying call of the, what do we call them in politics, the liberal left, the liberal left-leaning philosophers, to poo-poo nationalism. You know, that anybody who salutes the flag or anybody who stands up for the national anthem is somehow a dullard, or somehow, you know, a person who's rooted in a tradition that we should no longer have. But Prabhupada says if you have any national feeling at all, do something for people. So he says here, if you actually feel for your country, for your community, for your people, just spread this Krishna consciousness. They are dying. You spread this Krishna consciousness, they'll come again to life, and everything will be actually beautiful. That is my request. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Sankirtan Mission ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna.